If you run out of those, I have a few more. Last week we looked at the details of the destruction of Jerusalem and Israel by the Roman armies in AD 70. And it's a sad story that was repeated. This was the second time Jerusalem had been destroyed. When was the first time? Nebuchadnezzar did it, representing and leading the armies of Babylon. Made three incursions into Jerusalem, and the last time he kept getting rebellions coming up against him, and so he decided, well, we'll just wipe them all out. And so he destroyed the city, tore down the temple, the walls, ruined all the houses. So that happened way back in 587 B.C. and carried the captives away. And then we get the story of Daniel, and we look at that, and there's a number of things in Daniel that have a bearing on what we're studying in the book of Revelation. But the destruction of Jerusalem was repeated then in AD 70 for the same reasons, rebellion against the authorities, the major empire. And the first situation was Babylon, and the empire of the world in the time in which in AD 70 was of course Rome. So in the lesson tonight, we're going to look at first a chapter which describes God's viewpoint or heaven's viewpoint about what had happened. Kind of a justification for what he had done. It looks rather harsh that he should destroy everyone and carry away the survivors as captives to Rome and tear the place down the way he did. But in God's view, there was something seriously wrong with Israel and Jerusalem. And Jesus had alluded to that, didn't he? Remember the famous quotation that he had in the Gospels about Jerusalem, Jerusalem. You murdered the prophets and those that were sent unto you, stoned those, and I would have gathered you as a... What was the picture that he had there of how he would have gathered them under his wings? Like what? Like a hen gathering her chickens under the wings, but you wouldn't come. And then, at the time when Jesus was on trial and Pilate couldn't find any reason to have him crucified, the Jews insisted upon it, and Pilate said, well, his blood, he washed his hands of the situation, said, I'm innocent of the blood of this innocent person. But the Jews cried out, what? His blood be where? On our heads and upon the heads of our children. And in a rash curse that they call down upon themselves, that is the basis, really, of what happened to them in AD 70. Now, the handout tonight we'll get to in just a minute, it's an interesting thing. We've been seeing this beast from the sea on a number of occasions there at the bottom of your handout there. And this beast of the sea represents atheistic, pagan governments and world empires particularly. And so we're going to talk about how it, a little bit in a minute, about how it occurred and how it is shown in chapter 17 of Revelation, which we're looking at chapters 17 and 18 tonight. So 17 is kind of God's view of what the reasons were for what he did. And 18 is the effects on humanity, with some commentary from heaven about it as well. And so we have a lot of verses to cover, and we won't do as many side trips into the rest of the Bible tonight because most of it is pretty plain. So beginning in the first verse of chapter 17 of Revelation, one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls. Now he's talking about what was in those seven bowls. The wrath of God that was poured out upon Israel and particularly Jerusalem. And so it represents God's anger at Israel. And of course that's, as it was introduced to us back in chapter 15, there was no redeeming them at this point. They had crossed the line and they were going to be destroyed. So each of those seven angels had a bowl and they poured them out in sequence, you recall. We talked about that last week. So he came and said to me, and this is John now who's seeing something, a vision here. The angel says, "Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." Well, that business about many waters, we'll see in a minute, it's explained as the nations, the pagan nations of the earth, and really that's what the sea represented, wasn't it? She's a part of the paganism in the world. She should be a child of God, but Israel had departed. And I pointed out to you once before about the last verse in the Old Testament in Malachi. If they did not respond to the teaching of John the Baptist, what would happen? The last word in the Old Testament in Malachi is a curse. Else I will come and you'll be cursed. So with her, the kings of the earth, now the earth represents Israel, the kings of Israel committed adultery, and with the inhabitants of Israel, and the inhabitants of Israel were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. And we'll talk about that in a minute as to what that represents. Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into a desert. Now you might recall back in chapter 12 that the devil was chasing Israel around and she received some protection in the desert. And that's the same figure, of course. So I want to remind you, though, there's another verse we'll get to in May. I think it's 2 or 3 weeks away now. In chapter 21, and notice the similarity. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the last seven plagues, so that's another of these angels, or maybe the same one, you see, came and said to me, "Come," just like he had said before, "and I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." Who is the bride of the Lamb? The church, of course. And so the contrast here is the old, unfaithful Israel and the new Israel, which is the church, which is supposed to be faithful, isn't it? "Show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." And he carried me away in the spirit to the desert? No, to a mountain great and high, and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. So the old Jerusalem was destroyed, and the church, it's replaced by the church, the new Jerusalem, and it has a totally different basis, doesn't it, as we've been talking about in a lot of different classes in this church. So here are a couple of bookends. They're introductory paragraphs to two different subjects. One in Revelation 17 is the unfaithful Israel, and the one in Revelation 21 is going to be the faithful Israel. So these two passages introduce the contrast between faithfulness and rebellion. And that's why I named the book that I wrote about Revelation, Heaven's View of Faithfulness and Rebellion. And so the church is to be faithful, but Israel was rebellious. And so that's important that we understand that it was the rebellion of Israel that destroyed them. Okay, well, we'll go back to the verse we were reading. "So he carried away into a desert. And there I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had seven heads and 10 horns. Remember the seven-headed, 10-horned, red dragon. This is it. It's not Satan now. This is the beast of the sea. And we encountered him in a number of places, and I've listed them at the bottom of your handout there, as we've been reading. He was the one who came up out of the abyss and killed John the Baptist, or at least his henchman, Herod the Great, did so. And he was the one responsible in the 12th chapter for lurking in the scene to kill the Messiah as he was born. And he's the one described in chapter 13 who took over Israel, actually ran the show, as that 13th chapter shows. And now we see him in chapter 17. So we're going to see him described again, and in your handout, we're talking about this particular beast. We'll get to that in just a minute. He was covered with blasphemous names. What does that tell you? He's unholy, isn't he? Yeah, he is opposed to God. And the seven heads and the ten horns will come again in a minute. We've talked about that before. Now, the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet. So what would that represent? Royalty, wouldn't it? And was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. So what do you think about her welfare here? Is she poor or is she rich? Evidently, she's well off, isn't she? And so here she is. Here's Israel doing very well materialistically, right? Got power, got all kinds of items that represent riches. She held a golden cup. And, of course, only the rich would have a cup made out of gold. But the cup was filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. What are abominable things? It's detestable stuff, isn't it? It represents the fact that she's been deceptive and underhanded and doing all kinds of sin. And so that's in her cup. And we'll talk about the fact that she's an adulteress. This title was written on her forehead. And I read one scholar who said that sometimes adulteresses were branded on their foreheads so that people would know. But this was written on her forehead, Mystery Babylon the Great. I think the word mystery goes with the first line there. Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. Now remember, we said early on that the earth represents, it's really a translation of the word in Greek, which means several things, but it means the land. And the land that Israel occupied was the promised land, wasn't it? And usually when in your translation into English, when they say the earth, it really should have been translated the land. The land that God had given to Israel. And it had been desecrated by the abominations of Israel. Now remember, we talked about Jeremiah some before. Back in the second chapter in verse 20 is sort of a comprehensive story about Israel and her prostitution. Long ago you broke off your yoke and tore off your bonds. This is God talking to through Jeremiah, talking to Israel. Long ago you broke off your yoke and tore off your bonds. You said, I will not serve you. Who's you? God, sure. I'll not serve you, God. Indeed, on every high hill and under every spreading tree, you lay down as a prostitute. What was on the high hills and spreading trees? Idols. That's where the pagans put their idols. And when Israel went into idolatry, you read in the Old Testament about high places. And these were places that, and they planted a tree there, and it was representing one of the idols. And they served idols. That's what was wrong with Israel when the first Jerusalem was destroyed. That's Ezekiel talks about that extensively in his prophecies. And so they were prostituting themselves to idols when actually God considered them to be his wife. And that figure is laid out for us in one particular prophet. Do you know which one? Hosea, that's right. He dealt with a prostitute, didn't he? Married one, and then had to buy her back. And also, that whole story in there is an acting scene of God's view of what Israel was doing. So they started early on in this direction, and it continued. God had trouble with Israel throughout its history, with idolatry and serving idols, and he considered that a prostitution, a spiritual prostitution. Is that possible today? Does humanity serve other idols? And of course the answer is yes. Whenever you elevate something ahead of God, it's an idol, and you're relegating God to a secondary position. And that's what Israel had been doing all along. If they served God at all, it was not. Remember what was the first commandment in the Ten Commandments? You shall have no other gods before me. And so that was primary in God's view. Okay. Verse 6, I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. And who was it that, who were the saints? The saints of old. We're talking about the Old Testament here at this point. And did the prophets bear testimony to Jesus? Sure they did. And there were many messianic prophecies in the Old Testament. And so this Israel had stoned the prophets and killed the prophets and persecuted them and run them out of town and given them. Why? Most of the time because their prophecy was what? Positive or negative? Very, very negative. They didn't want to hear what the prophets had to say because the prophets never said anything good. Well, God sent them because Israel was in trouble, didn't they? And had headed down the wrong direction, and they didn't want to hear that. But of course, they always responded to it that way. And often it made them mad, and they killed the prophets. When I saw her, I was greatly astonished, John says. And then the angel said to me, why are you astonished? Well, John hadn't really seen Israel the way God sees her, you see. And so it was quite an eye-opening picture here for him to see this woman. I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast she rides, which has the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast which you saw, now here's a mystery, see. The beast which you saw once was, now is not, will come up out of where? The abyss, and go to his destruction. The inhabitants of Israel, whose names have not been written in the book of life, from the creation of the world, will be astonished. We've seen about these people who did not have their names in the Lamb's Book of Life back in chapter 13, didn't you recall? Those who followed the beast didn't have their names written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Who has their names written in the Lamb's Book of Life? The Christians do, of course, don't they? And so they'll be astonished when they see the beast because he once was, now is not, and yet will come. So there's a mystery. What do we mean by that? So here's your diagram, which I copied from this slide and gave to you. And it's what I call the beastly calendar. The ancients had an interesting way of indicating dates. You might recall when we talked about some of the early gospel manuscripts, they put something called a dating bird at the end of the manuscript. You remember that diagram that we showed, whereby the number of marks above and below the bird and the length of his tail and the number of scrolls in the tail or feathers indicated a date. And they did that indicating a date from the founding of Rome. That was a famous approach in the time of the writing of the New Testament. But here we have a different kind of dating. We have a beast, and each of these golden orbs that you see up there represent a head on this beast. Remember, the beast has how many heads? Has seven heads, and so there's seven of those, beginning with Babylon. If you go back to Daniel, we talked about how this was formed once before. There was the winged lion in the case of Babylon, which was the first head. And then in the fifth chapter of Daniel, there's a famous dinner where Belshazzar brought out the vessels that had been taken from the temple in Jerusalem. And he was, what was he doing with them? They were partying with them, weren't they? And then suddenly something on the wall happened. What? A hand appeared, just the hand, and writing some things on the wall. Remember what it wrote? Yeah, it wrote something in what is the word? What's the language that we're talking about here? It's not exactly the same as the Jews spoke, but it was a related language. And it meant you're found, you've been weighed in the balance, and what? You don't weigh enough. You're found wanting. And what's going to happen? Kingdom's going to be taken from you and divided among the Medes and the Persians. And that very night, Darius the Mede brought an army into Babylon. Now, Babylon knew that there was an army lurking in the area, but they weren't afraid. They had a beautiful defense system with a great big wall and alarms and all kinds of soldiers at the gates and everything. And they didn't think anybody would come in. But Darius was kind of sneaky. He dug a canal, his soldiers did, and diverted the Euphrates River that flowed through the city of Babylon. And across this river, there was a fence built at water level. But he diverted the river and walked in underneath the fence through the dry riverbed. And Babylon was taken without, like we would say, without firing a shot. Before they knew what happened, they were occupied. And so that happened in 539 B.C., so I indicated that down there. So if he talks about the beast, he doesn't, but he could have said with one head it would be there. Now, Persia was the second head, and there were a series of kings in these. Cyrus was a major player in the kingdom of Persia, and they ruled the whole world, so it was a world empire. And let's see, was it another Darius? Seems to me it was. That Alexander defeated. And that happened in 330 B.C. Alexander was from Greece, wasn't he? From Macedonia. And so the Greeks captured, by defeating the Persian army, they captured all of the world. And he subdued all of the world. His army went to Egypt and all the way to India and even up in Afghanistan, they said. Everywhere that was occupied by humanity, they had control of it. But shortly after Alexander conquered the world, what happened? He fell ill and he died. And so even if you should gain the whole world and lose your soul, it doesn't afford you much, does it? He was only about 30 years old. So there was some jockeying for position among his generals. There were six or seven of them, but four came out on top, and they're the four heads of the beast that was a leopard. You might remember that. The Persian beast was a bear. The Greek beast was a leopard with four heads, and that represents the four different generals who each divided up the world empire and together ruled the whole world. But eventually, three of those heads fell away, And we were left with Ptolemy. The Ptolemies occupying Egypt. And the last of the Ptolemies was killed by a snake. Who was that? Who? Cleopatra. That's right. And there was no world empire. At about 167 BC in the time of the Maccabees, the Israelites gained their independence. And so they ruled their own affairs for about 100 years. And there was no world empire. And when there was no world empire, the beast was in the abyss. And so he was until about 167 BC. Then he was no more. That's what he's described at in the verses that we just saw. Remember that? The beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. So at the time that John is being shown this beast, this must be in the time of the Ptolemies. You see, the beast of the sixth head, then when the Ptolemies were destroyed, the beast went into the abyss and there was no world empire. So he once was, now is not. And so we're looking at the time when the beast has been placed in the abyss. And he's going to come back up. You might remember in 11:7 in Revelation that it says he came up out of the abyss at the time that he killed John the Baptist. Now, we concluded that the effect there was on John the Baptist. But that's the case. That was his reappearance because Rome took over the world in about 30 B.C. when they took over Egypt from the Ptolemies. Actually, that happened in about 60, but it took 30 years or so before they established a world empire. And so then we come to the time in which Rome, the seventh head, is ruling, and that'll show up in just a minute. So they were astonished to see the beast come back because Israel had lived for about 100 years without any other kingdom controlling them, you see. And so now they were under the rule of Rome again, and the beast is back in business. Okay, I'm going the wrong direction. Let's go the other way. So you might look up those verses and see what my point was about this calendar. If you look to see how many crowns are on the kings of Rome, on their horns, remember that's how that tells you about when it happens. And in one case, you'll find one where the seventh king is ruling. Well, the seventh king was Nero. And I gave you early on, I think I gave you a list of the 10 kings of Rome, that beginning with Julius Caesar, coming down to the time of Vespasian when Jerusalem was destroyed. After that, it didn't matter. The beast is going to be taken after the destruction of Jerusalem. The beast we'll see in a future verse here, not tonight, but in the next week or two. The beast is captured. He's thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, and he's done forever. And so the implication there is that there's never going to be another world empire. Did you ever think about that? Several have tried. Who tried in the last century? Well, Germany and Japan thought about it, didn't they? But they didn't. They weren't able to pull it off. And so the British Empire, it's spoken of as though it ruled the world, but it really didn't. And do the Americans have an empire? Do we rule the world in any sense of the word? We don't even want to rule the world. And we talk about being, we're even averse to being the world's policeman. That's not a good role either, is it? So by looking at how many heads or how many crowns, you can tell where we are in the history of the world when it's being described to John in these verses. And that's an interesting way. So he's kind of a calendar to help you see what period of time we're talking about. All right, we're going to have to move on. Now, this calls for a mind of wisdom. The seven heads are seven hills on which the woman sits. And many scholars have looked at that and looked for a city with seven hills. Well, it turns out Rome's built on seven hills, and some say Jerusalem is too. But this doesn't say the hills are all in one place. The hills are, the heads represent the centers of the authority for the various kingdoms that ruled the world. And so all of these cities sat on a hill because most of the ancient cities were built on a hill. It was easy to defend. And it's called a tell, T-E-L-L, as the archaeologists dig up these ancient cities. So she's sitting on all of them, but not all in one place. There are also seven kings, because each of the heads had a king, didn't they? The kings came and went for Babylon and Persia and Greece and even Rome, but one king at a time in most cases. The five have fallen. One is, the other has not yet come. And so we're looking at if you go back to the picture here, we're looking at the time of Ptolemy now. Five have fallen over on the left. The one in Rome has not yet come. But when he does come, he must remain for a little while. The beast who once was and now is not, he's in the abyss, is an eighth king. And what that really means is that the beast really controls all of these kings. The beast is under the control of Satan, but he's been given the authority to control all of the kings of pagan world. Why is the beast in control of pagan kings? Well, they worship idols. And Satan's in charge of idolatry, isn't he? He uses idolatry all the time. So, the other, when he does come, the other is not yet come. When he does come, he must remain for a little while. The beast who once was, now is not, is an eighth king. He belongs to the seven, that is, he's a part of them, and he's going to his destruction. There's a prophecy that we'll see fulfilled shortly. The ten horns you saw are ten kings. And remember, the ten horns are all on the last head. And that's what those spikes are on the Caesars over there. Okay, so I'm trying to make a diagram that you can kind of remember. I don't know if I succeeded or not, but this isn't the usual way to depict these things. So there are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom. So if he's talking about the time when the beast is in the abyss, then the Roman kings have not, Rome hasn't ascended to the throne, and the ten kings have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. And so they're cohorts with the beast. They have one purpose and will give their power and authority to the beast. That was described to us back in chapter 13. They will make war against the Lamb. So here's what's coming up in chapter 19 later on. But the Lamb will overcome them. Why? He's more powerful, isn't he? He's Lord of Lords, King of Kings. And with him will be his called, chosen, and faithful followers. Who are those? That's us. Then the angel said to me, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits, this is the same as the sea, you see, are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. That's the way it was described to us when the beast came up out of the sea in chapter 13. The beast and the ten horns you saw will hate the prostitute. So Rome was always having trouble with Israel when Rome was in charge of the world. They will bring her to ruin and leave her naked. They will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. That looks horrible, doesn't it? But that's essentially what happened that we saw happen to Jerusalem and to Israel when the Roman army came in. For God has put it into their hearts to accomplish his purpose. The bowls of wrath poured out upon Israel were mitigated by, were actually carried out by the Roman army. Agreeing to give the beast their power to rule until God's words are fulfilled. So he was acting in behalf of God's will. The woman you saw is the great city. And that's got to be, from all these descriptions, it has to be Jerusalem. And it, the interesting way, I think it's not exactly translated right here, is the great city that rules over the kings of the earth. And of course, earth means the land, the land of Israel. And so the great city, Jerusalem, rules over. Now the kings, in the time of Jesus, there were kings of Israel, not to be confused with the kings of Rome. And so Herod the Great and the various kings that came after him that are dealt with by the apostles and later on by Paul and Peter and others, These are subjugated to Israel, aren't they? They're subjugated to the beast, really, is what we're looking at. After this, I saw another angel. Now we get to chapter 18. And we're going to get the more pragmatic view of what's happened here. That was what we've seen was how God viewed it. It was, and it's sort of symbolic, it's sort of mysterious, but this is very pragmatic. After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven. He had great authority, and the earth was illuminated by a splendor. Who do you suppose that was? I think that must be Jesus. I don't know that it is. He's not named. With a mighty voice, he shouted, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great." And that we saw back in chapter 14. An angel, he would be the second angel of the three that came down in chapter 14, who said the same thing. "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great." Excuse me. Now, she has become a home for demons and a haunt for every evil spirit, a haunt for every unclean and detestable bird. Isn't that glorious, Israel? Why? What sort of bird is unclean and detestable? We have them in the woodlands. Vultures, buzzards. Why? Well, it's full of dead bodies. You remember what happened back in chapter 16? We're looking at it now after it's fallen, you see. And so the land is full of death and horrible effects of war. "For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of Israel committed adultery with her, and the merchants of Israel grew rich from her excessive luxuries." So now we're going to look at the materialism of Israel. "I heard another voice from heaven say, 'Come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you'll not receive any of her plagues, for her sins are piled up to heaven, and God has remembered her crimes.'" And so this was the warning that Jesus gave to the Christians, you recall, in the 25th chapter of Matthew. He said, when you see the armies surrounding Jerusalem, what should you do? Flee, get out of the city. And the Christians gathered in the city of Pella and other places too, I'm sure, and they were not harmed by the Roman armies. And we saw that back in chapter 14. So, here again, looks like we're talking about Jerusalem. "Give back to her as she is given. Pay back double for what she's done." And what she had done was crucify the Messiah. "Mix her a double portion from her own cup. Give her as much torture and grief as the glory and luxury she gave herself. In her heart she boasts, 'I sit as queen. I'm not a widow, and I will never mourn.'" What does that verse have anything to do with? Why, if she sits as queen, why would she say, "I'm not a widow"? Well, how did she get to be queen? Did her husband, who was king, die? She's denying that, you see. My husband wasn't king and I died. I got to be queen how? On my own power and authority, didn't I? And so she's boasting here. She boasts. "Therefore, in one day her plagues will overtake her, death, mourning, and famine." And of course it did. "She will be consumed by fire, for mighty is the Lord God who judges her." Now remember, all of this is being given to John before the event. Sounds like it's already happened, but it hasn't. See, Jerusalem is still functioning at this time. And so this represents the fact that the book of Revelation was written in the AD 60s, not later, as many authorities suggest. But that's what happened to her. "When the kings of earth who committed adultery with her and shared her luxury..." So, the kings of Israel, when it says the earth, the kings of the land, who committed adultery with her, with Jerusalem, and shared her luxury, and see the smoke of her burning, they will weep and mourn over her. Terrified at her torment, they will stand afar off and cry, "Woe, woe, O great city, O Babylon, city of power, in 1 hour your doom is come." Why does God insist on calling her Babylon instead of Jerusalem? I think that question sort of came up earlier on. Why not just say Jerusalem? Well, the tendency would be if it was Jerusalem and it named as Jerusalem, we wouldn't apply it to any other country or any other place, would we? The word means confused. And she was drunk, remember, when we saw her in the last chapter. And anybody who gets that confused and worships the creature rather than the creator, that worships idols rather than God, then they can look forward to the same sort of doom, can't they? And that's a worry about our nation today. The merchants of Israel will weep and mourn over her because, why are they so sad? It's not the usual cause of weeping and mourning. Because she's dead? No, they're weeping and mourning because nobody buys their cargoes anymore. My business is wrecked. Cargoes, and it's an interesting list here of the things that were pouring in and out through Jerusalem. Jerusalem sat on a trade route between Egypt and the Great Fertile Crescent, all of the cities to the north. And everything came through there, and the merchants of Jerusalem were Jewish business people. Are they pretty sharp? They are sharp indeed, aren't they? They still are. And they exacted the taxes and their share of, they would buy something from this group and sell it to another group and make a profit. Cargoes of gold, silver, precious stones, and pearls, fine linen, purple, silk, and scarlet cloth, every sort of citron wood, articles of every kind made of ivory, costly wood. Many of these things made of ivory, costly wood, bronze, iron, and marble are idols. You realize that. Cargoes of cinnamon and spice, of incense, myrrh, and frankincense, of wine and olive oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and carriages. Those are all things that belong to the people who are doing very well, aren't they? These are the wealthy. And Jerusalem was wealthy. But the last item is a real surprise. The bodies and souls of men. I'm sure God was very unhappy about that. If you dealt in the bodies of men, what are you doing? You're buying and selling slaves, right? What about the souls of men? How can you deal in those? Remember something Jesus said to the Pharisees? That you travel everywhere in the world looking for those that you can proselyte. And what's the end result? They're worse than you are. That's right. You're making terrible people out of them. You're making copies of yourself, and you're in trouble. The souls of men. Israel was supposed to be priests to the world for God and represent goodness and righteousness to the rest of the world. And they weren't doing that. They were selling faulty information, weren't they? And so they were deceiving the world, and God was most displeased with that. They will say, now this is the people who are mourning, the fruit you long for is gone from you. Your riches and splendor have vanished, never to be recovered. The merchants who sold these things and gained their wealth from her will stand far off, terrified at her torment. They will weep and mourn and cry out, woe, woe, O great city, dressed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. That was the picture, you remember, of the woman sitting on the beast. In 1 hour, such great wealth has been brought to ruin. Every sea captain and all who travel by ship, the sailors and all who earn their living from the sea will stand far off when they see the smoke of her burning. They will exclaim, was there ever a city like this great city? You get the impression that we're talking about a very famous city, and interestingly, Jerusalem was just such a city. the time it was destroyed. They will throw dust on their heads and with weeping and mourning cry out, "Woe, woe, O great city." Lamentation is the idea here. But the reasoning behind it is materialistic, isn't it? Where all who had ships on the sea became rich through her wealth. In 1 hour she's been brought to ruin. And verse 20 is kind of a summary here. Rejoice over her, O heaven. Rejoice. Now, that's a surprise. The world is lamenting the destruction of Jerusalem, but the angel is telling John here, rejoice, saints and apostles and prophets. Those are the good guys. God has judged her for the way she treated you. And so you see, that's a very famous motivation, a very important motivation for what God has done here in destroying Jerusalem because of the way they treated his people who were sent to them to try to help them to straighten out their life. Then a mighty angel picked up a boulder the size of a large millstone and threw it into the sea. He had to be mighty to do that. Millstones were so big, and this is a big one. One individual couldn't pick it up, but an angel can. And he said, with such violence, the great city of Babylon will be thrown down, never to be found again. And what comes next is something we looked at before, because I gave you this verse when we were talking about the indication of who Babylon was or what city it's talking about here. This is found in Jeremiah 25. But, it's Jeremiah 24, excuse me. And so you saw these verses once before. The music of harpists and musicians, flute players and trumpeters will never be heard in you again. No workman of any trade will ever be found in you again. The sound of a millstone will never be heard in you again. The light of a lamp will never shine on you again. The voice of the bridegroom and the bride will never be heard in you again. Your merchants were the world's great men. By your magic spell, all the nations were led astray. See, they weren't carrying out God's plan for Israel at all. That was to be the holy city where the world came to worship, and they weren't allowing that at all. They wouldn't allow pagans. They wouldn't allow people of other nations to even get near the temple. In her was found the blood of prophets and of the saints and of all who've been killed on the earth, that is, in Israel. So that's why all of that happened. And I found it interesting that in James, who was a writer to the Jews now, James was, if you read at the start, it was written to the 12 tribes of Israel. Now listen, you who say tomorrow, today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. What are they interested in? Making money. Do we live among a people who are interested in making money? Yeah, we really do, don't we? And we have to be very careful about that we don't catch that virus. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. Now, James wrote this before the destruction of Jerusalem, obviously. And it's kind of interesting as he goes on in chapter 5. Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming upon you. He seems to know what's about to happen to Israel. And I guess from listening to James, this James is the brother of Jesus, from listening to Jesus' teachings. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Soon going to be the end of Israel. And of course, It wasn't the end of Israel as a people, it was the end of Israel as a land. And we could have a discussion, we don't have time for it, but we could discuss what about Israel today. But it isn't the Israel that God had brought into the land in old times. The last days, so Israel's looking at their last days. Nathan has a comment. Well, it was said of Jerusalem, the first Jerusalem destroyed by Babylon. And we discussed that when that verse came up about a month or 6 weeks ago, that although someone may build a city on the same place and call it Jerusalem, it's not the Jerusalem that was there. And it's not the same people. And so I think it's in that sense. And I think it was Ken that made that comment for us. In that sense, that you're not going to go on like you're going on now. And it was a long, long time. It was a couple of thousand years before they got to go back to Jerusalem, wasn't it? And the Jews that are in Jerusalem today don't know their ancestry. They don't know. They can't build a temple. They can't. So it's not the same thing that was there in the time of Jesus. Yeah, it sounds like that. We talked about that before. Okay. Let me read the announcements. Our time is gone, and some of you have kids that are going to be running wild in the lobby here shortly. So, Caleb Cox,